This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive. Hockey news. The NHL draft is just days away now. Round one begins Friday night in Vancouver. The Sabres with the 7th overall selection in the first round. Sabres today announced their 2019 preseason schedule. 6 games, 2 home games at KeyBank Center. Among the other 5 games, the Sabres play 3 road games and a neutral site game at the Pegula Ice Arena at Penn State University. That day, Monday, September 16th, they play the Pittsburgh Penguins at Penn State. Sabres preseason schedule. NFL news, 17-year career, Josh McCown retiring from football. The quarterback began his career in Arizona. He turns 40 years old on the 4th of July, spent the last 2 seasons with the New York Jets, made his announcement yesterday, and then McCown announced that he's joining ESPN as an NFL analyst. He'll make his debut tomorrow on NFL Live. Josh McCown played for 8 teams in his 17 years in the league, beginning with the Cardinals in 2002. Todd Gurley with the injury, the knee situation last year. We're getting to know more about it now. His personal trainer confirms that the running back has arthritic issues stemming from an ACL tear in college that kept him back at the end of last season. They plan on managing his workload in the weeks and months ahead and having Gurley shed some weight. Green Bay Packers claimed tight end Michael Roberts off waivers from Detroit late yesterday, waived last week after a trade that would have sent him to the New England Patriots was rescinded because the conditions were not met. Roberts did not pass his physical with the Patriots, according to ESPN. The Denver Broncos say they plan several ways to honor team owner Pat Bowlen, who died last week at the age of 75 after a long battle with Alzheimer's. He dies 2 months shy of his enshrinement into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But the Broncos say renaming their stadium in honor of Pat Bowlen is not something that they have in mind. And the Buffalo Sabres homestand starts tonight, a 6-game homestand, starting with a 3-game series against Indianapolis tonight, 7:05 at Salem Field. It is Sean Reed Foley on the mound for the Herd. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio. Did we talk at all? We didn't, Steve, because we were both out. Pat Bowlen, any thoughts on him, Broncos owner? Did you ever have any cross paths?
I had one quick interview with him after the Broncos beat the Green Bay Packers in the Super Bowl, and John Elway had decided, I think it was the Packers, or maybe it was the second Super Bowl they won. They won those 2 in a row there with John Elway. And they were thinking maybe John Elway was going to retire. And I asked him. He want John back. And I said, are you going to have to pay him more money to get him to come back? And he didn't really like the question very much, but he answered it. And I could tell too by the atmosphere around that. That was a winning locker room in a Super Bowl, so it was pretty cool. But the level of respect and. Not only respect, but affection. You know what I'm saying? About the people that had around him. By that time, he had been the owner of the team for quite some time. And it was just one of those guys that when he walked into the room, there was a level not just of, you know, this like, oh, gosh, you got to watch what you. It wasn't like, you know, your dad walked in the building. It was like somebody, like a role model walked into the room. That kind of thing. It was a different kind of feel when Pat Bowlen walked in. And that kind of struck me as a guy who was that important to that organization and stuff that had that era about him, not just of being a guy that, kind of a snap to attention kind of thing. It was more of a, oh, wow, okay, cool, you know, kind of thing. And he was in there. It was neat to see the difference in his persona and some of the other guys that you've run across.
Over the weekend, he passed away last week? Over the weekend, listening to something on the radio, somebody referred to Pat Bowlen as one of the greatest owners in NFL history. And as soon as I heard it, I thought, oh, come on. Then I thought about it a little more, and I said, you know, he might be one of the greatest in the last 30, 40 years, really, with, you know, that franchise out there in Denver with, they build a new stadium. The franchise has always had strong support out there, and it's a regional franchise, too. Identifying and naming the icon John Elway as the football figure in the organization – Yeah, I could see it. I could see, you know, and they won. And they didn't win right away. In fact, they were very disappointed. Remember when they had, the drive in Cleveland, and they had a couple of years in a row, late 80s this is, when they failed
right.
and to try to get to the Super Bowl. They eventually did and failed some more in the Super Bowl and then eventually won, as you said. Yeah, right?
We beat them in a championship game here yep. in Orchard Park.
Was that 7-3, 9-3?
10-7.
10-7?
It was a 10-7 game. They were a force. And, of course, John Elway was a tremendous quarterback, maybe one of the great all-time quarterbacks ever. And, you know, you talk about a guy who had everything. He had an arm like nobody's ever seen before. And he could run. He was an athlete. And then as he played 17 years. In the last 5 years of that career, he was like a grizzled veteran, mm-hmm. you know, and still could run. And he finally, after three losses in the Super Bowl, won two in a row. It was a great culmination. And Pat Bowlen was credited. And I think the thing that gets me about it was that other owners, and I know they all do that to a certain extent, but there's a great level of respect for Pat Bowlen at the very top of the National Football League throughout all his years affiliated with it. And I think that is as much as telling as anything about his
legacy. You
know,
I was troubled to hear this over the weekend, too, and talking, listening to people talk about Pat Bowlen. Did you know that the ownership of the franchise is kind of in doubt now?
Yes.
He set up a trust more than 10 years ago, and the plan, many thought, was for his daughter Brittany Bowlen to take over, but the oversight of the Bowlen estate has been challenged in a court in Colorado in the past year by some other members of his family. I hate to hear that. I consider the Broncos one of the flagship foundational franchises of the league. I hate to hear that. That has gone to a court fight
go
among
from,
family members.
Yeah, go from the ultimate model of stability yeah. to a cat fight, you know? A fight between yeah. brothers and sisters. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's bad. That's not a good look, and it's sad to think about.
Hey, on the line with us right now, we got a guy who spent his time in the NFL, five seasons in the league, former quarterback for the Houston Oilers. He is now commissioner and CEO of the XFL, XFL 2. Happy to have Oliver Luck on the line with us. Hello, Oliver. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, up in Buffalo. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, John. Hello, Steve, old teammate. How
there you
doing?
Go. I'm doing great. It's good to hear from you, Ollie. Congratulations on the cusp of we talked to you at the Super Bowl. Now you're that much closer to actually kicking it off.
Yeah.
How what's left to be done? I mean, what are the big obstacles facing you at this late date?
Well, we've got another 5-6 months to go as we launch, but we've got all of our head coaches hired. They in turn have hired all their assistant coaches, so our coaching staffs are fleshed out. All of our football ops staffs are fleshed out. We're now turning our attention to players. We've been doing a series of showcases, think combine, in each of our markets. We're halfway through that. So we'll take a look at about 800 players, and we'll sign a bunch of guys from that group and put them into our draft pool. Our big moment, I think, in terms of player acquisition will be, no surprise, right after the NFL cuts. It's fascinating when you think about it. You know, Steve, when you and I played, guys would get cut every 4 or 5 days, as teams went down to the regular season roster. Now it happens in one fell swoop, beginning of September, when teams go from the 90-man, that they've brought to camp down to the 53-man roster. So that's a lot of players when you consider, you got 35 or so guys, even more, who are cut, by each of the 32 NFL clubs. So that's when we'll sign a bunch of our players, put them in the draft pool. We're planning to have our draft in sort of mid-October, and we think we can, get real good competitive equity amongst our teams. I'm a believer that the quality of the player pool is so much deeper and richer and better today than it was 15 years ago, let alone, Steve, when you and I played 35 years ago. There's so many good young players coming out that just aren't quite good enough to make the NFL. They might come from a smaller school. They might be, just in the wrong spot on a roster, can't make the 53-man. And we think we can sign a bunch of those guys, and we think they can play pretty good football, given that I think we've got some pretty good head coaches, guys like Bob Stoops, June Jones, and others that I think will give us a good, good chance of making this league work.
Yeah, why will this league work when so many others have failed?
Good question. I think really two things. One is the time that we've had to plan this league. Vince McMahon, the WWE chairman, CEO, founder, is supporting this league financially, and he's given us the time to plan, right? So I've been on board now for about a year. Our head coaches have been on board back, since February, March of this year, hiring staff, et cetera. There's no substitute for time to put a roster together, to get TV deals lined up, which we have with Fox and ABC, ESPN, the Disney Network, so to speak. So it's really time, and it's quite honestly the resources that Vince has to put behind this league. Money matters in startups. Doesn't matter if it's a tech or a healthcare or a sports startup. Money does matter, and Vince is committed to making this league work in terms of the financial resources he can put behind it. So I guess at the end of the day, I'd say two things. It's time and resources that will give us a much better chance. There's no guarantees in life, as we know, but it gives us a much better chance to make this league work.
Oliver, Steve and I were talking earlier on our show today about what went wrong with the Alliance of American Football and what could go right for the XFL, and I maintain that it's what you just mentioned. It's ownership, right? Stable ownership that the Alliance sort of let crumble even as their first season started, a couple of weeks into it.
Well, it's almost, irresponsible, to go into a season knowing that you can't make payroll by week two.
Yeah.
you just shouldn't start, right? If you know that it's that precarious. And, I hate to criticize the other league because I don't know all the details, but I do think we've got the time, and we have the resources. I mean, clearly the Alliance tried to get ahead of the XFL for whatever reason. They tried to create, the old first mover advantage. But if you're not prepared and aren't properly financed, there is no first mover advantage. It's a first mover disadvantage. And I think that's what they kind of stumbled into. Football's a very important game to a lot of people. And, I want to make sure that we can, be very sort of serious with our players and coaches and, give them real opportunities, not just to, play football, but to make a living, right? To put, put food on the table for their families, to have the opportunity to play well and get another shot for many of these guys with the National Football League. Those are all, very serious career things that we want to make sure we're able to do. So, I certainly wouldn't have been involved with our league, had I not had a sense that Vince was very committed, financially to this. And I don't think guys like Bob Stoops or, Mark Trestman or Jim Zorn, these are respected figures in the football world. I don't think they would have signed up either, June Jones, if they didn't think that this was a real viable league and that there was real money behind it.
You mentioned the television and the deals with Fox and ESPN. My understanding is that there's not a whole lot of rights fee money coming to your league, that Vince McMahon is prepared to keep it going basically on his own for a while until the TV sort of builds itself up. Is that the way it looks?
Well, I won't reveal any details about our TV deals. I think they accomplished, though, what we really wanted to accomplish, which was visibility, right?
Yep.
People know where to get football on Fox or on ABC or on, ESPN, FS1. There'll be a game of the week on each of those four, carriers. So, obviously, there's revenue that we need to generate from ticket sales, from sponsorship, from merchandise, all the usual sources, concessions. But Vince, I think, understands as a very successful businessman, built WWE into a publicly traded powerhouse company, $1 billion a year in revenue. But Vince understands that it takes time to build a league like this. But he also expects there to be revenue coming in day one. And so we've got beyond just the football side, we've got a lot of work to do on the business side. But we've got people that we've brought on board, ex NFL executives, Jeffrey Pollock. Worked for many years for the Chargers. He's our president, COO, doing a great job as we gear up on the business side. So we think we're pretty well equipped to, to give it the old college try. And again, I think we've got as good of a shot as anybody has had to have a spring league and get it established, right? And get it, sustainable to a point where Vince is willing to continue to support it.
And a target date for start is, it's probably set in stone now for you guys, February 8th, Saturday, February 8th?
That's correct. So that's the weekend after the Super Bowl. We're banking on the fact, and this has been backed up by a lot of our research, that, there's a there's a void in the lives of a lot of people, probably the three of us would be in this group. There's a void in the lives of folks right after the Super Bowl because football, really disappears from the screen. So we think we can take advantage of that interest, come out of the chute playing good quality football, what I would call crisp football, and I think that will give us a chance to build a TV audience as well.
We're on the line with Oliver Luck. He is the commissioner, CEO of XFL, the league coming up next spring. Oliver, somebody asked me this question over the weekend about the saturation level. Tell me what your research has shown about the desire, the interest in spring football right after the NFL schedule ends with the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so if I had to do the proverbial elevator speech, I would basically just say this. You know, there are about 85 million football fans in this country. About half of those fans, about 40 million, classify themselves as diehard, passionate fans, right? Like the three of us. Our league is designed to really appeal to those 40 million diehard, passionate fans. They will tell us, we'll watch more football. It's got to be good football, right? It can't be sloppy. You know, it's got to be good football, but they'll watch more football. And that's a pretty significant chunk of, you know, the American population. Those are fans that don't sort of automatically switch over to the NBA, you know, or college basketball or baseball in the spring. They're football fans. They want to watch more football. And while the NFL is interesting in the off season with, you know, the combine, the draft, free agency, all the sort of off-the-field activities, I still think it's more fun to watch, you know, real games, you know, and we're planning on an up-tempo, fast-paced, you know, offensive-oriented game. So I think our league really is designed to attract those 40 million people. That's based on all the market research that we've done.
How much of this, we were talking earlier in our show when we were talking about having you on, and I thought, you know, you think about the NFL and how much free promotion they get. They've got, you know, three networks and a whole network at ESPN who do nothing but talk about them all the time. They've got their own network who talks about them 24/7. They get a lot of free promotion even when they're in the off season. And how does a team, a league like the XFL come in and like establish a foothold with, and I know you've got deals and we're not going to discuss the details of them, but you know, how much of that benefits the NFL stuff they don't even pay for in just the attention and kind of the momentum of that league? How do you gain that as the XFL?
Well, you know, I don't think anybody competes with the NFL. I think, you know, it's a juggernaut. It's a great league. I love it. You know, I was proud to have played in the league. I'm proud my kid can play in the league. So, you know, we view ourselves as a compliment. So, you know, I think, though, we're in a little bit of a different era with social media, you know, where content is really king. And you can use different platforms with social media to get the word out. So I think we're in a position to do that. You know, we take, ironically, even though the Alliance failed, right, because of their financial situation, we take some, you know, confidence in the fact that in their one game they had on broadcast television, right, just one game, which was their opener on CBS, on the broadcast network, not CBS Sports, but CBS, they drew a very good crowd. And that was the weekend right after the Super Bowl. So, you know, we think with over 20 games on Fox and on ABC and the two broadcast networks that we can really do a pretty good job of building up a TV audience. So we've got to market, promote, to be smart about how we do it, but we really need to rely in large part on social media. But you're right, Steve. I'm amazed, you know, at the constant chatter on all the ESPN stations and on, you know, the Fox sports stations as well, you know, just about the NFL. It's incredible, right, how much attention they get just because it is something that, you know, Americans love. But I think we can peel off a little bit of a piece of that. We don't need much, right? If we peel off a piece of, you know, one layer of that onion, I think we can have some success.
Hey, Oliver, I've heard and read about some interesting rules changes, some pretty fundamental rules changes that the XFL will employ. Can you talk about those? What will look different for football fans?
Sure. We've got about a dozen things that we're looking at doing that are a little bit different than what the NFL does. I think 95% of what the NFL does is great, and that's going to be our default. But there's a few things we're looking at. One is a 25-second clock, right, just to speed up the game. I don't think people like watching players in a huddle. You know, I'd rather see them playing an up-tempo, fast-paced game. We've got a different kickoff that we're looking at. One of the things you'd like, Steve, we've got the redefinition of a forward pass. So, you know, quarterbacks are in the shotgun so often now that they can't really throw a lateral pass to a wideout who, you know, takes the second pass downfield, right? You know, the old trick play that right. You see every now and then. And you can't do that because the quarterback's in the shotgun. For him to throw a lateral means the receiver might be 8 yards off the line of scrimmage. So we are looking at redefining what a forward pass is. As long as the ball doesn't cross the line of scrimmage, a quarterback can throw, you know, throw it sideways, right, to the wide receiver who could take a step back and then, you know, launch a ball downfield. So it's little things like that that we think are kind of fun. They're exciting plays. We may see one or two a game, but, you know, one or two a game is sort of cool because those are often big plays, and we want to make sure we have a, you know, an up-tempo, fast-paced, you know, very offensive-oriented game. So we've got about a dozen innovations that we think make some sense. We were very selective in looking at these innovations. We spent a lot of time with former coaches, guys like John Fox and Jim Caldwell, former, you know, player, great former players like Doug Flutie. I wanted somebody that had played up in the CFL, you know, because we wanted to kind of take a look at some of the things that people up in the CFL, you guys are close in Buffalo to Toronto, and you probably watch a little bit more CFL. There's a lot of cool things that they do in the CFL. In fact, we've adopted their punt, you know, which is the halo rule,
right?
The no fair catch halo rule, because we think that makes more sense, particularly in today's day and age where, you know, health and safety on special teams is more of a factor than it was, you know, even a dozen years ago or so. So we've got a handful of things that we think people will like. But at the end of the day, we believe that our game will be 11-on-11, same size field, four downs, right? The same sort of game that everybody recognizes. I think people will turn on the TV and say, "Oh, that's football." It's not quite, you know, as different as like the CFL is when you turn it on and see 12 people, a guy running towards the line of scrimmage in motion,
right,
in a much wider, you know, deeper field, right? So it's much more like the American game.
One more question for you, Oliver. Steve and I were talking earlier on our show here today about the XFL, and a two-part question about the players and salaries. What's like an average salary going to be? And these guys that are going to be signed, as you mentioned, September 1st this year, are they then precluded from returning to the NFL? Or how do you handle that? If a guy gets a call, as frequently happens, you know, after he's released, "Hey, come on back. We cut you. We need you now." What do you do about those?
Well, once we have our draft, which means that a player is assigned to a team, you know, we will make that player stay with us, right? Because we're building franchise. We can't have guys, you know, just walk away at any one point. But certainly before that, you know, if a player is able, before the draft takes place, if a player has an NFL opportunity, we would encourage them to take advantage of it after our season is over.
Right.
These are all going to be one-year deals. After our season is over, we expect a lot of our guys to sign NFL contracts and get back into training camp, and that's fine. You know, we're not trying to build a developmental league for the NFL, but we also realize the NFL determines the ecosystem, if you will, of football. And we're going to be better off with players who want to try to get back to the NFL, who use, you know, the XFL as that opportunity. So we're going to have different salary levels. You know, our core player will be making anywhere between $55,000 and $60,000 a year. But we'll have a handful of guys, including, you know, sort of star quarterbacks, right, premier quarterbacks, who've all had NFL experience. They'll be able to earn, you know, well into the six figures. So we're not doing what the Alliance did, which was pay everybody the same, right? One size fits all. We've got, you know, sort of three levels of salary that we'll be providing our players.
What do you like about this, Oliver? It sounds very well thought out at this early stage.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, again, part of that was, you know, Vince giving us the opportunity to really sit and plan for a year, you know, and identify coaches and get input from coaches. You know, as you guys know, football is it's not a complicated game, but it's a complex game with lots of moving parts. So we wanted to make sure that we could, you know, sift through all these issues and really come up with a good, solid plan for the game, but also a good, solid business plan. And I think, you know, we're getting close to that point. But thanks for the opportunity to share this information with y'all. We appreciate it.
Ollie, you're right. There does seem to be a niche out there, and we wish you all the best at filling it in the springtime with your football league.
Well, thank you very much, John. Steve, always a pleasure to talk with you, my
Thanks,
friend.
Oliver.
Good seeing you, Ollie.
Oliver Luck, XFL commissioner, CEO, played quarterback in the NFL for five seasons, most of that time with the Houston Oilers, former Houston teammate of Steve Tasker. Right? It sounds like they've thought it through, right, in terms of salaries, in terms of television. I mean, who knows if it'll work, right? I mean,
the landscape is
littered with failed spring football leagues, but this one seems like they've got a plan.
And they've got a group of people who've given it a shot once, learned some lessons, fixed that, watched other leagues, and then most recently the AAF, this is 1 year before they give it a shot, watch them, watch the numbers and the geometry of where the interest was, why it failed, some of the things that they did very well that you can incorporate, some of the things they didn't do well. I think the fact that they're going to have their players under contract and they can't leave is a plus for their league. While it's going to be a bigger decision for the players as to whether they want to shut the door for 6 months on the NFL and play in the spring league like that. So it'll be interesting to see.
We didn't ask, and it was on my list, but I don't know. We didn't ask about Johnny Manziel, but Oliver Luck was quoted just yesterday saying, we don't know if Manziel will get an opportunity to play in the XFL. That remains to be seen. Why not? Why wouldn't he, right? If he can play, if he can help somebody, why wouldn't he play? Johnny Manziel.
Yeah. Same reason he hasn't played yet.
Probably. He was talking about the coaches. Do you remember Kevin Gilbride, who was offensive coordinator here?
Yes.
He's got the New York team. He's the head coach of the New York team. Kevin Gilbride was a good man. Did you ever deal with him much?
Only in a couple of production meetings.
Yeah.
When he was head coach of the Chargers for a minute. Yeah.
Good man.
Yeah, you know who else? June Jones, who coached my son last year in the Hamilton Tiger Cats. He's now in the XFL as well.
Kind of so like where we were with the Alliance. Remember, we're rattling off the names of the guys involved, and you're like, oh, that's a real guy. That's an impressive guy. The XFL's lining those guys up as well.
They do have some football people involved, no question about it. And I think the football end of it is going to be what it is. They're going to be playing this game with some bells and whistles that make it a little bit unique but not crazy. I remember XFL 1.0 was a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
This league is going to be a little bit more down to earth with some bells and whistles that make it more attractive and more fun to watch, more interesting to watch, but still at its core be good football. It's going to be, as always, it's going to be interesting to see him take the field and get a feel for what that league is really going to be like.
That's, XFL coming up in the spring,
February 8th,
right after the weekend after the Super Bowl. Are you one of the? I confess, I'm one of those people who don't mind a week or two off football. In the spring. That's what happened to me last year. Yeah. The Alliance started up right after the Super Bowl.
I watched that first game.
I know you did. I didn't. I was like, I need a break. I need a little break.
And I never saw it again. You couldn't find it. You know what I mean? It was hard to find, and then they were gone.
Yeah. Hey, when we return, we got a couple of things going on. NFL True or False is coming up. Also, we'll get back to our discussion of the day. Who would be the surprise breakout player for the Bills in 2019. We will revisit the Twitter poll, read from the tweet sheet, and take your phone calls at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Steve Tasker, John Murphy coming back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. From One Bills Drive, John Murphy and Steve Tasker coming to you from our One Buffalo studio. We've got the NFL True or False coming up. We also have a Twitter poll, which has gotten a lot of response, and we have time for a few more responses if you're interested. Want to know from you, who will be the surprise breakout player for the Buffalo Bills this season? Twitter poll. We've got more than 1,100 votes in so far, which is a good number, and it's very, very close. Usually when there's this many votes, it doesn't stay this close. Who would be the surprise breakout player for the Bills in 2019? On Twitter, 32% of you say Zay Jones, and 32% say Devin Singletary. Motor, right? Isn't that his nickname, Motor?
Yep.
20% say Trent Murphy. 15% have somebody else in mind. Wow, that's really good. 803-0550, the number to call if you have a thought on that. Toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. Or you can send in a tweet to One Bills Live. We've got the tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. David has an interesting tweet. He says, gosh, you could have had at least 10 listed here as possibilities if Twitter allowed. Assuming he makes the team, and I'm thinking he will, I'll take a wild guess at wide receiver Duke Williams. Someone will break out at wide receiver big time. Wow, that's a really, David, that's a really good tweet. And it's a guess, as you said, and you're right. It was hard to pin down just three guys as potential breakout candidates.
Yeah, we went round and around thinking we'd leave it as an open question instead of giving you the choices. But and Duke Williams has gotten a lot of play today because he does have that different look about him at the wide receiver position than the other guys. They've got a lot of speed guys out there, a lot of smaller guys.
There's more play for Duke Williams, I believe. Tony in Niagara Falls. Hello, Tony. You're on the air. You want to talk about Duke Williams? Is that right?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good.
Great. Hey, Mr. Tasker. How are you?
Good.
Great. Excellent. I think it's Duke Williams. Reason I say Duke Williams, I watched him in CFL for two straight years. And he reminds me of John Stallworth and Eric Moles.
Wow.
John Stallworth from the old Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we know who he is.
Yeah, I know you guys know who he is.
And Eric Moles. Yeah, and that's somebody else brought up similarities to Eric Moles' game as well. He's got that nasty kind of attitude, chippy attitude, playing wide receiver that you don't see very often. And he's a big-bodied guy, bigger than most of the guys they've got on the roster. So that's good. And why do you think his skill set will transfer down to the NFL?
Because, like he said, I listened to the interview about it. He said he grew up. He had to grow up and be a grown man, you know. And watched him in the CFL, and he was a beast. 50-50 balls, speed, everything you could want in a wide receiver. I think he's going to be our number one.
Whoa.
That's what I heard about him from the CFL, was that he was a 50-50 ball winner. I mean, the balls turned into 65-35 balls instead of 50-50. So he's got that kind of physical ability. He's got the size and strength to go with it. We'll see if he can keep it between the lines and play.
And one other player, Shady McCoy.
Shady is a breakout player. Where do you come up with that?
Well, the reason being, because like a lot of people said, he didn't have an offensive line. And a lot of things were going bad for the Bills last year, even though, you know, and you know, rookie quarterback, no offensive line. Plus, I'm rooting for him because I'm an original member of the Midget Football League he played in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania in 1971. It started in 1971, and I'm an original member of that, and he played in the same league. So he's come from great stock.
And he broke all your records, Tony, right?
All right, Tony.
Yeah, he broke all my records once he got off the bench.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's great.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks
Tony,
for
great
calling.
Call. Thanks for calling. It's interesting that a player like LeSean McCoy would be thought of as having a breakout season this year after all he's done in the National Football League. Now, I get it. It would be a bounce-back year, no question about it, because he did struggle. The whole offense struggled last year, but – you know, to use him as a breakout player might be a little bit of a stretch.
From the tweet sheet from Richard, in response to the question, who'll be the surprise breakout player for the Bills this year? Richard says, Trent Murphy. He thrives on working hard, and because of injury, he has not been able to do it in Buffalo until this year. Oliver and Hughes require extra attention. He'll win the one-on-one battles. More front four pressure this year and higher sack count and significantly more interceptions. Go Bills. Interesting. Trent Murphy, he says. Good one. Yeah, that's one I would pick.
Yeah, and for good reasons, too, because that last year, four sacks, I'm sure that was below his expectations, and there's no question. We had him in here, and he said he feels 100% better than he did a year ago, more confident, he's stronger, and he just feels closer to being normal, which you would think would lead to better play. We've also got one more from the tweet sheet. Who will be the surprise breakout year for 2019 Buffalo Bills? From Andrews says also, I'm going with McCoy. He didn't have the best results last year, and that falls a lot on the offensive line. So hopefully the new line will open up holes. His numbers start to stack up again. A lot of success this season will fall upon the O-line improvement. We had a caller earlier in the show that said that same thing. It all comes down to the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't fix that, nobody is going to play well on the offense. And I think that's true. But here's the thing. And I said it when we had Bobby Johnson on here, the O-line is always considered one player. But it's five guys, and if you're going to try and individualize it, you're not going to get very far. And when you talk about skill positions, guys are going to have breakout years, you need to have something you can quantify. And the offensive line, if you got to talk about all five of them. Certainly you can quantify the running game and pass protection, the amount of sacks you give up, but you can't put it in just one guy.
Right.
And when you have almost – five of the 11 guys on the field fall inside the offensive line. If they're not playing, five of your 11 guys are worthless out there. So, yeah, it's going to look pretty bad if they're not playing well. We all found that out in the hard way last year.
Hey, let's switch gears a little bit, do a little true and false, NFL true or false, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Couple of good ones here today. True or false, this comes from USA Today. The Chargers are the most primed team to win their first ever Super Bowl. The USA Today article says that with the possible exception of a credible home field advantage, they don't seem to be lacking for much. 12-4, AFC's top record last year, and that was without Joey Bosa and a couple of others, including tight end Hunter Henry. Look, I picked the Chargers as my AFC Super Bowl representative in each of the last 2 years. I'm not doing it today, Steve, but I might. They've got talent all across the board. They got a good coaching staff. I say true to this. The Chargers are primed to win their first ever Super Bowl. I think the Chargers are really set up well.
No question, they're in a window of opportunity here. Phillip Rivers is still throwing the football at a high rate. The only thing you can count against the LA Chargers is their venue, their home mm-hmm. game. Their home games aren't home games. It didn't stop them last year from playing extremely well and winning a lot of games. But I think, sooner or later that's going to come back to get them. There's a reason why they've never won a Super Bowl. And I just think they've never been able to put it together. And one of the reasons is their home venue has never been a quality venue. Even when they were at Jack Murphy Stadium, it's a dump. And StubHub Field, while it's very nice, is the size of, there's 200 colleges that have a bigger stadium. So I don't know. If there's one thing you count against them, it has nothing to do with their roster, has nothing to do with their players, has nothing to do with their coaches. It's their home venue. So other than that, yeah, you don't have to really look very far to see how good the Chargers could be. So, yeah, I'll say true to that. They are stacked for it, except for one thing, and the place they play in.
Speaking of venues, NFL true or false, number two of our two selections. Lambeau Field is the best venue in the NFL. This comes from New York Jets. .com, the home of the Packers. They had an article about NFL stadium rankings, which team has the best venue, which team has the worst, where does MetLife Stadium rank. They rank MetLife Stadium number 26, the home of the Giants and the Jets. They rank New Era Field number 25. Let me just read that. Yes, we're putting the former Ritz Stadium ahead of the expensive building in East Rutherford. Yes, the Bills need a new stadium, but for all of this place's flaws, at least it has character and atmosphere and pretty good viewing angles. Of course it does. But they got Lambeau ranked as the best venue in the NFL. True, false? I say false. Lambeau's fine, but and there's tons of history if you're into that thing, which many people are, and I get that. But there are better viewing places for a venue to watch NFL football than Lambeau Field. It's pretty basic inside. There's nothing special about the sight lines, unlike the place right next door here where I think the sight lines are fantastic. I happen to think this is one of the best places to watch an NFL game in the league right now. And if you don't care about, crazy, expensive, huge scoreboards that straddle the field, and if you don't care about all kinds of weird suites and expensive seats, this might be the best place right here. I sound like a homer? Okay. I think this is the best place to watch an NFL game right here.
Another stadium you like to get outside of Buffalo?
Okay, outside of Buffalo, I really like Gillette.
Yeah.
I think it's a good place to watch a game. Good sight lines, like Orchard Park.
Spend a lot of time there.
Yep, I've been there a lot. I think that's a really good place. And I like Baltimore's a great stadium, I think.
Baltimore's an intimate stadium, yes. Yeah. It's very intimate.
Good sight lines.
And I like this, too, because we don't talk about this very much anymore. They're football-only stadiums.
Yeah.
Like Miami Dolphins, that's a soccer stadium, and it used to be a baseball stadium as well. And the sideline stands are very far from the field. And Lambeau's a very nice venue, although
it's more about the mystique and the history than it is about the actual venue.
It does when you're standing on the sidelines. I did a game there this year. I love they've added lots of seats onto that stadium up high, and they're and it makes it even more intimate. So there are some nice stadiums, and it comes down to personal preference. You can't quantify any of this, and I don't know why they even try, because there are certain things about this stadium and Orchard Park that are far outstrip other stadiums, even the new ones. But I'm with you, Murph. There's nothing wrong with this stadium we've got here. It's got great sight lines, great venues. I think, like you look at Seattle, I've always said that stadium is a work of art. But you know what? There are a lot of seats in that stadium that are really high and far away from the action,
far
away.
You ever try to get around in Seattle?
Yeah, it's hard.
It's hard to maneuver the stadium.
It's hard. It's hard.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
That's a big for me. Yeah. The ease of which you get around. But I think it's interesting. And you'd be a lot of people for a stadium that is as old as ours is, how well it stacks up.
It does.
I think it really does.
All right, a break. We got more coming up. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Okay, what have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Brett Gagnon joined us from Bleacher Report earlier on in the show. We talked with him about our Twitter topic of the day. Who has the best chance to be a breakout, a surprise breakout player for the Bills in 2019? Here's what Brett said.
In Buffalo, you wouldn't consider Robert Foster to be a surprise at this point. I think nationally you still would. I know obviously John Brown and Cole Beasley joining that receiving core. You know, you wonder how many opportunities he'll get. But you look at what he did late last season and down the stretch and the impact he can make with a guy like Josh Allen getting air under the ball. You wonder if he might have a pretty big season lying ahead of him. And then, you know, again, same deal. Tyler Kroft is a free agent acquisition. No one should overlook him, but considering the fact that he only has the one big season in terms of touchdowns with the Bengals a couple years ago, someone no one's really talking about nationally, especially considering all the other moves the team made in the offseason. I'd look for those two pass catchers, especially if Kroft can get healthy and be productive.
All right, pretty good. Pretty good reasoning by Brett Gagnon. We had Oliver Luck on the show earlier this hour, the new CEO and commissioner of XFL2. We asked him, what will make this XFL work in spring football when other leagues have failed? Here's what he said.
You know, Vince McMahon, the WWE chairman, CEO, founder, is supporting this league financially, and he's given us the time to plan, right? So I've been on board now for about a year. Our head coaches have been on board back, you know, since February, March of this year, hiring staff, etc. There's no substitute for time to put a roster together, to get TV deals lined up, which we have with Fox and ABC, ESPN. So it's really time, and it's quite honestly the resources that Vince has to put behind this league. You know, money matters in startups. Doesn't matter if it's a tech or a healthcare or a sports startup, money does matter, and Vince is committed to making this league work in terms of the financial resources he can put behind it. So I guess at the end of the day, I'd say two things, you know, it's time and resources.
They got them both. We'll see if it works. Hey, we had a really good, really close Twitter poll today, maybe as close as it's ever been. Who will be the surprise breakout player for the Bills in 2019? And with more than 1,200 votes in, right? 1,200? Yeah, 1,200 votes in. 33% said Zay Jones, 32% say Devin Singletary, 20% say Trent Murphy, 15% say somebody else. I'm surprised by the tightness of that race, but yeah. I get it, Steve.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch training camp. We're kind of getting geared up for us. 37 days, I think, away. Yep. And the league's kind of dark, so we're going to be having generalized Twitter topics, I think, for a few weeks. You might need some help deciphering. I'm going to meditate on that tonight.
Yes, think about it. Production assistance from George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Homander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, James Robel, our producer, Jay Harris. We are back tomorrow at 12 noon. Make sure you join us then. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.